Welcome to Shattering This, a program devoted to the fastest growing segment of society, to those who have come to realize that the world's political, religious, military, economic, academic, and media institutions are corrupt, that most have become counterproductive. None of them can be fixed. Our mission is to know who is working against our interests, to understand how and why they're doing so, because exposing such menacing schemes isn't hateful, even when they're religious and political. It's caring. And in our concluding hour, we're going to use evidence and reason to explore the disparity of opinion between Yahweh, who is God, and Paul, who is the founder of the Christian religion. Our phone number, if you'd like to participate in this discussion, it's toll-free, 877-300-7645. Yes, at the end of last week, President Barack Hussein Obama said that he was going to send 300 military advisors to help fight the Islamic-led insurgents. How do advisors fight? If they're advisors, are they non-combatants? If they're non-combatants, how are they fighting? I think we have a semantic issue here. He said, Mr. Obama said that the U.S. was prepared for targeted and precise military action if and when the situation on the ground required it, but added that U.S. troops would not fight in Iraq. So we should be assuming that those that Barack Hussein Obama sent to Iraq are logistics experts, their supply chain managers, their intelligence officers, their strategists. No. They're Navy SEALs and Army Rangers. They're combatants. Barack went on to say that there's no military solution and urged the Shia-led Iraqi government to be inclusive. Well, if there's no military solution, pal, then why did you send military men? If there is no military solution, why did you say that targeted and precise military action will be deployed? We have an internal contradiction. Anytime there's an internal contradiction in someone's statement, it means that they are lying. You know, you can be a liar without an internal contradiction, but you can never tell the truth with one. And he didn't just have one in his statement. He had two. There is a 0% possibility that Iraq is going to have a kumbaya experience of inclusiveness. Zero. And it's not that there is a 1% outside shot, everything goes perfect, America dispatches another $100 billion worth of weaponry, and we deploy 500,000 troops to impose it. There isn't even 1% chance. When you sacrifice wealth and lives, and you have absolutely no chance whatsoever of success, then you have to wonder if not the sacrifice of lives is murder. And that the squandering of resources is theft. You see, Sunni and Shia Muslims have been at each other's throat for better part of 1400 years. They have never been inclusive, ever. There was a brief time after Muhammad's death that Sunnis, or Shia, I should say, prevailed. All of the Islamic scriptures were compiled under a Shia regime. And Shia simply means that the genetic descendants of Muhammad would be entitled to rule the world of Islam as if they were God and king, general and politician. The problem, of course, with that is there are no descendants of Muhammad. There was one distant descendant, but he was killed early on in a battle for supremacy between Sunni and Shia. And since that time, Sunni and Shia have been at each other's throat. There has never been harmony between them. There never will be harmony between them. The war in Syria is largely a result of America not recognizing this balance of power, not recognizing this 1,400-year divide, and not just invading Iraq, which at the time was controlled by a Sunni who was at war with the Shiites in Iran, which is where the vast preponderance of Shiites reside today. But America gave Iraq to Iran. And when it did, Iraq became not only Iran West and a Shiite province, but Syria came under Iranian in this Shia control, as did Lebanon. Now, this scared the living bejesus out of the Saudis, even the Turks, and of course the Kuwaitis, because they represent Sunni Islam. And they hate one another. There's absolute hate between them. Hate that's beyond a Westerner's comprehension. And so to thrust back the advance of Shia influence, the Sauds, the Kuwaitis, the Qataris began to arm Sunni Mujahideen in Syria. And that started the Syrian proxy war. That war, of course, has spread. It is now in Iraq. And now that it's in Iraq, America is trying to say, oh, well, let's just make it all happy. And let's just pretend that there really isn't this 1,400-year divide between Sunni and Shia. Let's just all hold hands. And America is absolutely delusional. And you can't solve a problem that you created by a military intervention and invasion by another military intervention and invasion. You broke it. The military can't put it back together. Hello, Glenn. Good morning. How are you? Or good afternoon.
All right. I'm feeling a little rested and refreshed back from a recent trip to San Antonio.
Okay.
You're in
Baptist territory.
Oh yeah, well, all sorts of things, yeah. But anyway, mostly known for the Riverwalk, and that's
of course.
Yeah. Well, everything is proceeding according to the Balkanization plan for Iraq. Al-Maliki will be the mayor of Baghdad, just as Karzai is the mayor of Kabul.
Yeah, there you go.
It'll be divided into three regions, according to plan.
You know, that would have been an intelligent plan, had that been the plan. I mean, George Bush and Obama are both overtly opposed to Iraq being divided into three, because it looks like then that America went in and took a unified country and broke it into to pieces. And it means that the world's mantra of, why don't we just all get along? We're all on this planet together. It's just one happy little village. Political correctness, there are no real differences between people. Let's just all tolerate one another. That the mantra of socialism and political correctness is for rot.
Well, it's almost it's interesting, because these ISIS, and they like to say ISIL because they can put the Levant in there and sound sophisticated, but it's really ISIS.
Of course,
Iraq and Syria. We gave them their weapons and their pickup trucks, and they weren't faring very well against Assad, and all the Free Syrian Army guys went home. So these guys stream out of Syria, and over into Iraq, and we didn't really want to blow up the pickup trucks we had given them on their way up to Mosul. So they let them take over all these little, you know, cities and towns, and then, you know, as they get settled in and stronger and stuff, and they can, you know, draft a bunch of recruits and everything, they can always go, you know, backtrack and go back, you know, make another wave back into Syria. But in the meantime, they get to conquer all these smaller cities in Iraq, and again, it's very analogous to Afghanistan, because literally, you know, Baghdad might hold with all the old babies and children, mm-hmm. you know, and non-deserting troops hanging in there. But so you have, you know, again, Maliki, mayor of Baghdad, right. and just as far as I know, mayor of Kabul. And meanwhile, these guys get to beef up their status and their troops and get rested and refit, and then they can make sorties back into Syria as desired.
Yeah, it's amazing what has happened. First, as it relates to an acronym. An acronym, by definition, is you take the first letter in each of the words, and that is an acronym. And there is no question as to what the title is of the Islamic Jihadist group. It's the Islamic State, which is IS, in Iraq, which is an I, and Syria, which is an S. Now, their Sham, Syria, is Greater Syria. It's the Syria of Assyria, and therefore it is not just the country of Syria as it's known today, but the entire region. But that's still Syria. So it is definitely ISIS. It isn't the Levant. It's like the Presbyterian Church is being so religious and announced that they are boycotting all things Israel to align themselves with the Palestinians, because when you say Palestine, it sounds like you're enlightened, when in fact it says that you're an enemy of God and that you are a bumbling fool that's easy to bewilder. You know, I was looking, I've been reading these last few days about Babylon. And what the prophets Jeremiah, and Yeshayah, Isaiah, have to say about Babylon. And you look at the maps of the region, and all of them show, they'll say, Palestine circa 6th century BCE. It's as if they don't recognize that the name Palestine didn't even get used until 135 CE. It's just astonishing how stupid we are. Welcome back to Shattering Myths. We're having a conversation with Glenn. We're talking about Iraq and ISIS, the Islamic State in Iraq and Syria. This situation, Glenn, is so much worse than I think anyone in the West wants to acknowledge. For America, it has been simply this, we sacrificed 4,500 troops and a couple of trillion dollars, and we failed. And that the country being taken over by the group that we went in there to, allegedly, to remove, it just rubs America wrong that we lost another war. But that's really not what's a consequence.
Yeah, these people always think they can titrate their chaos, you know, that they can just, you know, drip a few drips in and create a little bit of chaos, and then it gets out of hand and they don't see it coming. I often think of the line from Robert Burns' poem, To a Mouse, in which he says that the best laid plans of mice and men gang off the glay or often go awry. And these people are subject to failure and miscalculation, too. One of the reasons I think the administration is using the term the Islamic State in Iraq and the Levant is many people understand that the word Levant is inclusive of Israel. And if the present problem is perceived as a direct threat to Israel, then they would be more accepting of, you know, implementing action, you know, as opposed to if it's just Iraq and Syria, maybe they don't want to be involved. But if Israel's under direct threat, then they're more likely to see it as justifiable.
Yeah, of course, that would be wholly hypocritical, since this administration literally despises Israel and would love to sacrifice Israel to the Muslim war machine, to jihadists. So that would be purely hypocritical. But I suppose that that, that is part of their strategy. Yeah, no one would accuse them of being honest. The reason this is really a the plans of mice and men have gone awry here is that America is supplying through its various agents, Saudi Arabia, Kuwait, Qatar, literally billions of dollars worth of very sophisticated war-making equipment. Surface-air missiles, anti-aircraft guns, 50-caliber machine guns, anti-tank, anti-personnel rounds. And they're also to the, and that would be to ISIS, to the Sunnis, Mujahideen, that are fighting to take down the Assad regime. And billions of dollars of these weapons. It was these weapons that were deployed to take over northern and western Iraq. And then in Iraq, America is supplying billions of dollars of weapons to the Shiite army. Because the army of Iraq is a Shiite army. And so we now have a non-existent border where America is supplying the weapons to both sides. There is no way to prevail under those circumstances. You can't arm both sides to the hilt and think, wow, we've done a marvelous thing here. The other issue is that when ISIS moved across the border to, and they didn't take just little towns. Fallujah is a big town, but Mosul is the second largest city in Iraq, well over 2 million people. What they have been doing here in the last few days is they have now captured every town and every city that's in western Iraq, so that now between what they own, what they control in eastern Syria and northern Syria, and what they control in northern and western Iraq, create the very thing they were setting out to achieve, which is a unified emirate in greater Syria and Iraq. They've achieved what they set out to achieve, and they're extraordinarily well-armed in this process, and America isn't about to go across the border into Syria. So if America were to engage, these folks would either just hunker down in the cities, requiring the American bombers to kill millions of people, or they will retreat across the borders into Syria and vanish into those communities.
Right.
So there's no way to resolve this. This can't be solved. When they moved into Syria, they captured billions of dollars worth of American weapons that were left behind by the Shiite military that America had trained and equipped.
Right. And the numbers are kind of astronomical and daunting. We saw the other week a 500,000 refugees from Mosul. And now, this week, even in Pakistan, we've got 400,000 refugees on strike in Pakistan now. They're just beginning to cover that.
Yeah, and the number in Iraq has grown substantially since the report that I shared a week ago. It's now up to 1.5 million. And so you've got a 400,000 refugees in Pakistan, 1.5 million in Iraq. I think we have somewhere in the 3 to 4 million refugees in Syria. Yeah, the world's got a huge problem on its hands. It's a wonder that everyone just doesn't fall over laughing. The Obama administration said there will be no more American boots on the ground after the drawdown of all American troops, tens of thousands of them. It's up to the advisors to help Iraqi security forces vanquish ISIS on their own. But the 300 troops are comprised of Navy SEALs and Army Rangers, said retired Marine Sergeant Adam Vanotai. Not logistics officers. They're not supply chain managers. They're not intelligence officers. They're not even battlefield strategists. Vanotai, who scraped through the brutal battle for Fallujah during the Iraqi war, thinks the term advisor is obviously misplaced. It's political semantics. We are calling them advisors now instead of combat troops or boots on the ground. He says they are the most elite fighters we have. So if they aren't to be combat troops, I'm not quite sure who the president's going to refer to as a combat troop. As for ISIS, this fellow calls them semi-illiteral thugs. Now, I know that I have a tendency on occasion to mispronounce English words, but they are not illiteral. They may be semi-illiterate, but they are not semi-illiteral thugs driving around in pickup trucks with machine guns. By the way, pal, you paid for those pickup trucks with machine guns. Pardon?
If they're illiterate, illiteral, are they figurative?
They're figurative. Okay. They're just figurative. We should do what he says is they don't pose a military threat to the United States. They're occupied with decapitating Shiites and trying to establish an Islamist state in the vast open stretches of empty, irrelevant desert. So I guess what he's saying is we ought not go in and try to – he's saying one of two things. We either ought not go in and even be concerned with the semi-illiteral ones, or that 300 American combat troops is more than sufficient to wipe out the throng of semi-illiteral pickup truck driving, machine gun wielding ISIS troops. Picking up on this fellow's remarks, another combat veteran from Iraq said, using the same term, must be part of the military training. He said, a literal thugs have struck at the United States before and could strike again. We can't allow them to that to occur any more than it is right now in Iraq. Okay, so the second use of the literal thugs is saying we can't allow that to happen because they have struck at America before.
Illiteral is a word, but it simply means figurative.
Yes. Yeah, well, and what he was trying to say was illiterate. That's why I'm having so much fun with it.
Wow.
Yeah, he was trying to say illiterate. Even the Reuters, who is covering this and interviewed these, put semi-illiteral in quotation marks and then put in parentheses illiterate beside it.
This also describes the people who write commercials for talk radio.
Yes. Yes. Well, can you imagine, though, he's calling them figurative?
Yeah.
You know, and by the way, last time I checked, there were not a bunch of figurative or semi-illiteral, one and the same, or even semi-illiterate thugs driving around with pickup trucks, wielding machine guns in the back of them, shooting Americans. I am with him on one thing. We ought to just leave them alone. But I'm not with him in that we can't allow that to happen. It puts America in the position, and this arrogance is the thing that drives God crazy, it drives me crazy. This arrogance of America, we can't allow that to happen. You know, America might say, we can't allow a million people to starve to death in the state of Texas. You know, that wouldn't be arrogant. But when America says, we can't allow a religious movement to fight against another rival religious movement halfway around the world in the deserts of Iraq and Syria, there's something really, really misplaced about that arrogance.
Yeah, we don't have to throw up just another country. Like, can't we let, like, Namibia or Uruguay take care of something once in a while? You know, maybe Liechtenstein, you know, but no, it's always got to be, you know, our little imperial, you know, manifest destiny, tingling thinking, sticking our nose in everywhere.
Yeah, it's first of all, we can't prevail, and you should never engage where you can't prevail. Second of all, it's an improper response, and doing nothing is almost always better than doing the wrong thing. And third, we're the ones that created this mess, and we're not going to fix it by doing the same thing that created the mess. But beyond all of that, Iraq's not ours. The world doesn't belong to America. The world doesn't even respect America.
It will, yeah.
Oh, yeah, well, yeah. I'm not going to hold my breath.
Yeah, exactly. I wanted to broach one other topic about the refugees. There are certain microbial implications to you putting huge masses of ill-nourished and ill-hydrated humans together with poor sanitation facilities. And that is, like right now in Saudi Arabia, they already have the Middle East Respiratory Syndrome making the rounds, and that's going to have interesting implications for the Hajj in October. In Pakistan, they have thousands of children who are not inoculated against polio, going into the Waziristan area. We have all these hundreds of thousands, millions of refugees of the northern Iraqi Kurdish regions that are turned into the world's largest refugee camp, and where you have refugee camps, you're going to have typhus and dysentery. Yes. And when all this stuff starts, the game changes quite a lot.
Yeah, typhoid fever, malaria becomes a big problem. But SARS right now is way out of control. It's been grossly underreported in Saudi Arabia. It has now been exported to France and to England in Europe. There have been two cases in the United States, both with people who made contact with Saudi Arabians. And there are nearly 1,000 Saudi Arabians now that have been infected with it. And so it is a much bigger menace than is being suggested. And, of course, the Sauds don't want to, A, admit that they're incapable of remedying their own health issue, particularly since they're the guardians of Allah's holy shrines. And second, they don't want to miss out on the prestige that they gained during the Hajj. But the Hajj ought to be called off for a lot of reasons.
Last year they actually made a few proclamations about people who really shouldn't attend, the elderly and the sick and stuff. Mm-hmm. They got away with it last year, but not this year. It's too prevalent. It's too spread. Yeah, this year they should actually call it off, but in the interest of sanity. But I rather doubt that will happen.
Within Islam's leadership, you expect sanity? Right. Not likely. In this particular report illiteral ones, Reuters goes on to say, really ISIS has shown signs of sophistication, publishing complex reports on its finances, not only publishing reports on its finances and having the wherewithal to use accrual-based accounting, balance sheets, forecast ledgers. They have $1.6 billion of net worth at the moment. It has recruited fighters from multiple countries, not just multiple countries, from probably 100 countries around the world. The majority of the ISIS fighters do not come from Iraq. They have also bonded with the professional ex-members of the former Iraqi leader Saddam Hussein's armed forces. This is a part of ISIS that doesn't get much attention. But prior to the transfer of ISIS was fighting al-Nusra and Hezbollah, as well as the army military of al-Assad in Syria, that before they went from doing that to moving across the border into Iraq, they diplomatically formed allegiances with and incorporated members of the old Ba'ath Party, almost all of the Sunni warlords in Iraq into their fold. And so all of the leadership militarily, all of the leadership economically, all the leadership politically that the United States tore asunder. When we invaded Iraq, we took away the entire infrastructure that they had of military leadership, judicial leadership, political leadership, leaving Iraq to the only thing that remained, which was the Shia mullahs, the Grand Ayatollah al-Sistani. Well, those people didn't die. Those people simply were disempowered. And what ISIS has done is engage them. And so ISIS is not a bunch of Neanderthals running around trying to figure out what we're going to point our AK-47 at next. When they take over, like Mosul, they began to fly the Apache gunships and the F-16s because, you know, Saddam Hussein used to be an ally of the United States. All of this equipment is something that the Sunni warlords, the empowered Sunnis, were familiar with. And so it is comprised of them as well. And, you know,
for sale, one slightly used bureaucracy, you know.
Yeah.
Slightly shop-worn, ready for immediate employment.
Yeah. Now, while it's true that the Iraqi leadership, the Sunni leadership of Iraq that we disempowered, weren't typically fundamentalist Muslims. They were all Muslims, but they typically weren't fundamentalists. And they certainly weren't terrorists. There is a, you know, I wish Sun Tzu hadn't written The Art of War, because there is this myth that the enemy of my enemy is my friend. And so ISIS and the Sunni establishment in Iraq have formed an alliance. They are working together to rid the country of the Shia overlords that America imposed on them. And that is a formidable force in money and armaments and intelligence. Half-truths. Deadly things, because they're especially beguiling. The administration of the United States wants the world to think that ISIS is an offshoot of Al-Qaeda, and that they are terrorists, and that they are a threat to the unification of Iraq, and that it wasn't America's invasion that caused this, but instead the unwillingness of the Shiite government that we imposed on Iraq, because we undermined everything that the Sunnis had in place, that is what caused it. Well, there's a little secret here. Petraeus came up with a scheme called the Awakening Program. The day that it was announced, I went on a dozen radio shows and renounced it. His scheme was to supply weapons and money and training to Sunnis that were aligned with Sunni warlords in Iraq. Now, what he claimed was that the Sunni warlords would go out and attack Al-Qaeda. Why would they do that? Al-Qaeda was a Sunni organization, and there was a very de minimis presence of Al-Qaeda even at this time in Iraq. The real reason was that there were Shia militias with hundreds of thousands of participants. Just one of them, the Sadar's Mahdi Mujahideen, is comprised of over 50,000 jihadists, well-armed. In fact, they even have fancy uniforms there. They are a genuine militia army. And the idea was that quietly, not publicized, but if the Sunnis and the Sunni warlords were well-armed and they had militias, they could not only counter the influence of the Shiite militias, but they could also counter the influence of the Shia military that America was developing. It was very much like the idea of the U.S. Constitution, that since a militia is absolutely necessary, a well-armed militia is necessary for freedom, that there shall be no law interfering with keeping or bearing of arms. You know, we don't pay any attention to the Second Amendment of the U.S. Constitution in America, but Petraeus thought maybe that would be a good idea. It worked for America for a couple of hundred years to deploy it in Iraq. Well, the problem, of course, was when you arm both sides of a religious conflict, they're both going to use their weapons. And it was only a matter of time before the Awakening Program, which was the real basis of the surge, was going to backfire. And now what we know is that ISIS attack on the Shiites in Iraq, on the Shiite government, is being perpetrated not only by the professional ex-members of the Iraqi armed forces, but also by Sunni tribal leaders who have joined their ranks. America armed them. We provided the arms that enabled this. When are we going to recognize that we're not making the situation better? We're consistently making it worse. Then Obama says, our goal is to prevent Iraq from being a haven for terrorists. Well, if that was Americans' goal, why did we depose Saddam Hussein? Saddam Hussein was the best dictator in the Islamic world at making sure that his country was not a haven for terrorists. There were no fundamentalist Islamic terrorists in Iraq when Saddam Hussein was there. Why did we depose him if that was our goal? And now look at Iraq. There's no country on earth that suffers more from fundamentalist Islamic terrorists than Iraq. And the only difference between those two times is the American invasion. This is not hard to figure out. You know, it's time for Americans to pull off their patriotic hats, to stop suggesting that our military is making us safer, is providing our freedom, is serving our interest. They made this place vastly more dangerous. What we did in Iraq was suicidal.
Are we sleeping commercials?
Yeah, so much we could say. And we will return, Glenn. I hope you can stay with us. We're going to spend our second hour on this subject. I have an announcement in the second hour about the pronouncement by ISIS that women are to be used as sex objects now that they are in control of Iraq.